Today we're going to discuss, once again for the second time this week, I'm completely ripping this off from the new book, Headlines 2, David Lichtenstein, and he has a very, but I should note, this article that I am ripping off from him, he has ripped off from Rabbi Akiva Niehaus, who he quotes. He gives credit to someone from the Chicago community Kollel, who looked into the issue of sherry cask whiskey. I don't know how many of you are whiskey drinkers. I hope not too many of you. But there is a major kashrus controversy about many of the single malt scotches and whiskeys that people drink. So what is the kashrus controversy? For many, many years, it was always assumed the safest drink that could not possibly, there couldn't be anything wrong with it, is whiskey. There can't be any kashrus concern with barley, water, yeast, and that's it. That's all that goes into it. However, about 60 years ago, maybe close to 70 years ago already, Rabbi Teitz from Elizabeth, New Jersey, Zichrono Livracha, realized that blended whiskeys had some wine put into them, and it's often a significant amount of wine. He realized that up to 2.5% of the drink, when you're dealing with a blended whiskey that has stam yenam put into it, now wine itself, there's no non-kosher ingredients in wine, but stam yenam, any wine that comes from a non-Jew, you have to be concerned about that. That itself is an iser midrabanan. So 2.5% of the liquid, which is more than 1/60th. 1/60th, any math majors, 1/60th is 1.67%. So 2.5% is more than that, and therefore lechora would be a problem. So Rabbi Teitz and Rabbi Moshe went back and forth on this issue because Rabbi Moshe was mekel about stam yenam. Rabbi Moshe in Yerodeah Chelik Aleph Simon Samach Beis Samach Gimel Samach Dalet kept on going back and forth. Rabbi Teitz, kept on saying, "Well, you got to make it aser." Rabbi Moshe said, "I'm not going to aser." Back and forth, Rabbi Moshe refused to aser it. So we're going to have to discuss why Rabbi Moshe refused to aser it. Mostly because Rabbi Moshe held that the ratio we're looking at should not be 60-1, but rather 6-1. As long as you have 6 times the whiskey to the wine, you're going to be okay. Where does that come from? Now, the Shulchan Aruch in Yerodeah Siman Kuf Lamed Hei goes through how to use a kli that once had non-kosher wine in it and to get rid of all of the tam of non-kosher wine from the kli. And really, when we talk about sherry cask whiskey, that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about what Rav Moshe was talking about, where they're blending wine into it. When they put wine into something, it's very easy to figure out the percentage and to know whether you have the percentage that you need or not. When you're talking about kalim, however, you're not talking about putting wine into it. You're talking about aging whiskey in a kli that is supposedly absorbed with the tam of yayin. Well, how do you measure that? How do you measure the tam of yayin in the kli? So the Shulchan Aruch says you certainly have to worry about it, and he goes through all these procedures as to how to get rid of the tam of yayin. Now, obviously, the whiskey companies are not trying to get rid of the tam of yayin. They're trying to take advantage, to capitalize on the tam of yayin that's in the sherry cask, because it makes it taste better. They realized a number of years ago that it makes it taste better. So some of the background halachos that are critically relevant over here. Shulchan Aruch in Yerodeah Siman Kuf Lamed Zayin Si'iv Dalet Paskins, that if you put wine in a kli that used to have non-kosher wine, Shulchan Aruch doesn't talk about whiskey, he talks about wine, kosher wine, that you put in a kli that used to have non-kosher wine, Shulchan Aruch says, Usser, you're not allowed to drink that wine. However, says the Shulchan Aruch, if you put other drinks, beer, water, into a barrel that used to have non-kosher wine, that is mutter. So why the difference? What difference does it make whether you put kosher wine into the kli or whether you put beer into the kli? So the difference seems to be the issue of no same tam with gum. We assume that when something gives a negative taste, if the non-kosher product gave a negative taste to the food, it will not make the food non-kosher. It will not have a negative effect on the food. But if it gives a positive taste to the food, that's when we have to be concerned about it. We assume people do not want the taste of wine in their beer or in their water, and therefore it's considered no same tam lifgam, a negative taste. That's why you're allowed to drink such beer or water. But wine that's put in a wine cask, you certainly want the taste of the wine enhanced by the wine that's in the barrel, and therefore it's no sin tam lishvach, and it would be asr. So the question is, how does that translate over to the sherry cask? So it would seem pretty obvious. Is this lishvach or lifgam? When the wine comes out of the barrel, the taste of the wine comes out of the barrel into the whiskey, is that bad for the whiskey or good for the whiskey? Well, pretty simple. If it was bad for the whiskey, they wouldn't do it. They do it because it's good for the whiskey. In fact, they could charge exponentially more for the whiskey because people so desire that flavor of wine. Rav Shlomo Miller thought that, no, that's not what's happening. The flavor of wine would actually be bad for the whiskey. It's the aroma of the wine that's good for the whiskey, and rechalav milsa, we don't have to worry about aroma, and maybe that would solve the entire problem. That is a very difficult thing to understand. You know, exactly how do you differentiate between the flavor of the wine, the aroma of the wine? You certainly ask the whiskey companies, they'll tell you that it's the flavor of the wine, not the aroma of the wine. So fundamentally, assuming that we're going to require bittul, that it's going to be a problem, that we need to have so much kosher product that it has to overpower and be mevatel the non-kosher taste of the wine that's coming into it. So what are the numbers over here? Typically speaking, we assume 1/60th. 60 to 1 is enough to, you have a drop of milk falls into the chicken soup, right? You learn this very basic thing. How much chicken soup, how much milk? If it's 60 to 1, perfect, you're kosher. Otherwise, not so good. So, in fact, many of the Rishonim assume the same is true when it comes to wine. That's what the Ramban and the Ritva write in Avodah Zarah, Daf Ayin Gimel. However, the tour in Yerodeus from Kuf Lam Dalet quotes from the Ravid and from the Ri, and this is how we pass in the Shulchan Aruch, that when it comes to wine, you only need 1/6 of the mixture. If you have 1/6 of the mixture, that's good enough. Why? So the Shach says that he, in the context of explaining Ramah, the Ramah writes in Yardei Kuf Yudalid that you're not allowed to buy a drink that normally has wine added from Gayim unless you're sure that there's 1/60th. So the Shach writes that the Ramah makes a distinction between water and other drinks. When wine mixes with water, you only need a 6-to-1 ratio, because water in a 6-to-1 ratio will make it not even wine at all. But mixed with other drinks, you need a 60-to-1 ratio. However, the Taz disagrees with that Shach, and he says, regardless of the beverage that you're mixing the wine with, you only need a 6-to-1 ratio. So, Minchas Yitzchak, Rav Moshe Feinstein, both say, well, certainly Rav Moshe Feinstein says you need a 6-to-1 ratio, and that's good enough, and he points out that probably even the Shach would agree that wine is completely negated by something as strong as whiskey. Whiskey is a very powerful drink. If you ever have tasted it, certainly the first time, it feels like it's burning out your entire insides. It's an extremely powerful drink. So one would imagine that it's powerful enough to negate the taste of wine. Shulchan Aruch in Yardeas and Kuflam and Hey Paskins, when you have a kli that had non-kosher wine in it, wine is absorbed only in the very surface layer of the kli, what we call a kedei klipa of the kli. Ooh, so might you have a 6-to-1 ratio of the content of the barrel to the klipa, just the surface layer of the kli? You might, and in fact, Shulchan Aruch says that's all you need to have. But on the other hand, the Shach paskins that you need to have a 6-to-1 ratio, not of whiskey to the surface of the kli, but whiskey to the entire thickness of the kli. He assumes that when wine is in the kli, it will get absorbed in the entire thickness of the kli. If you do the math on that, and people who have done the research have done the math, and they've discovered that it's not enough. Not enough whiskey to be mevatel the entire thickness of the kli. So where does that leave us right now? Where that leaves us right now is we cannot say that wine is no sin tam lefgam into the whiskey. It certainly improves the whiskey. So we're going to require bittul. How much do we need for bittul? Maybe 60 to 1, but more likely 6 to 1. okay, do we have 6-to-1? Well, if you hold that you only need a kedei klipa, you have 6-to-1, that it only absorbs kedei klipa, you have 6-to-1. But we don't hold that way. We seem to assume that it gets the shot, like the shach, that it gets totally absorbed in the full thickness of the barrel, so we don't have 6-to-1. And that, therefore, should lead us to the conclusion that we've got a problem with whiskey that's aged in sherry casks. So what are the kulas? Why is it that at any shul kiddush you go to, you will find that you'll find all sorts of whiskeys that are supposedly aged in sherry casks? I mean, you've seen the name, the Macallan, right? That's aged in sherry. Glenfiddich, I think, is not. Glenmorangie and Balvenie and all of these famous drinks, they're all aged in sherry casks, and Jews are drinking them. So why is it? Is it because all the people who are drinking them just don't know anything about kashrus? No, there is room for leniency, and here is that room for leniency. The whole issue over here is an Isser Midrabanan to begin with. Okay, but we listen to Isser Midrabanan. We care what the rabbis have to say. But whenever you're dealing with Isser Midrabanan, Safek Drabanan Lekula. So are there any sveikos over here? Might there be room to say, well, we're not sure about certain things? Well, first of all, we already pointed out one of the sveikos. It was a machlokas whether the wine gets absorbed only in the klipa, in the outermost surface, or the wine gets absorbed fully. So we assumed, like the shach, that the wine gets absorbed fully. Shulchan Aruch didn't assume that way. Shulchan Aruch assumed that the wine only gets absorbed in the kedei klipa. Second major kula, the Shulchan Aruch paskins that once 12 months have passed since there's been wine in that barrel, you no longer have to worry about the taste of wine in the barrel, even if the barrel's been in use in those 12 months. Well, that therefore would mean that the what they call the first fill or the first generation whiskey in those sherry casks would be a problem. Second generation, meaning they'll age it for the Macallan, 18 years they age it. And then what do? They empty it, they bottle it, and what do they, just throw out the sherry cask? No, they refill them with more the Macallan for 18 years from now, right? So only that first generation would be a problem because that only that first generation is within a year of when it was used for wine. So that would be another tzad l'kula. You don't know if you have a first generation or not. A third tzad l'kula, you also don't know. But by the time the barrels get shipped to Scotland from Spain, you know, where they're making the wine in Spain, the sherry is in Spain, and they're shipping the barrels to Scotland where they're making the scotch, right? By the time it gets it, who knows? Maybe they're not using it till after 12 months since the last time it was used. That's a little iffy, because they probably are, meaning with modern shipping methods and you know, the way companies try to maximize profits and not waste time and make things happen quickly, it's unlikely that 12 months passed. But then David Lichtenstein did some of his own research. He's a well-to-do fellow, so he can afford to do his own research, and here's what he did. He sent a bottle of five different sherry cask whiskeys, or four out of five sherry cask whiskeys, to a lab to have it studied for how much grape product there is. What is the percentage of grape product in the whiskeys? And they found, for example, the Macallan, 0.05%. 0.05%. That is less than 1/6. That is less than 1/60th. That is a very, very tiny percentage. So now the whole question becomes, okay, do we rely on a lab in halacha? So this might be related to the machlokas in Yerideya Simon Tzadiches. If you're not sure if there's any tam of, let's say, chazer in your cholent, you know, a little piece of chazer fell in, or you're not sure if there's any tam of milk in your chicken soup, can you rely on a guy to taste it and say something like, oh, this chicken soup's good, but my mom used to make it better because she used to put milk in it. And then you say, oh, obviously he doesn't taste the milk. Can you rely on a guy? Shulchan Aruch says yes, the Ramah says no. That's what some of the posts can point out. An Ashkenazi is not allowed to rely on a guy for that, but he's allowed to rely on a Sephardi for it, right? So the Sephardi could ask the guy, and then the Ashkenazi could ask the Sephardi. Okay, but there are that the Ramah says we don't rely on it, either because we don't think we can trust him, or, as Rabbi Akiva Eiger says, because people might not be able to detect the taste. People might maybe aren't as good at detecting taste. According to either of those reasons, l'chora, we don't have a problem over here, because of course you could trust the lab; they're a professional lab, and also they're measuring it with scientific methods. They're not just tasting it, so of course they're going to be able to detect the taste. In fact, he quotes that the Shaar Metzion Ba'alacha quotes from the Sholem Eishiv and from the Beis Yitzchak that relied on lab tests when there was a concern of pig fat in oil, that they relied on lab tests. And Rav Sturmbach and Shuvus Van Hagas Chelek Aleph Simen Tav Chav Gimel also relied on lab tests for some of these things. It's not so pashut though, because Rabbi Eli Gersten from the OU pointed out that the lab tests are only measuring grape product, but sherry that's used for these barrels is not regular wine, it's fortified wine, and it's 20 to 22% alcohol. So a lot of what they're, and the source of that alcohol, they'll never be able to tell with a lab test. They're only telling what's left of the grape product, so they're not really able to say with certainty. Also, and probably more fundamentally, if you did lab tests on, you know, you take a, someone calls me up and says, oh, I accidentally cooked a milchig food in a fleshig pot. Oh, send it to the lab, right? Send it to the lab. You know what the lab is going to tell you? You're out of your mind. There's no fleshigs in there. There's nothing. We'd have to basically take all the Yoredeyas off the shelf in the Beis Medrash and throw them in the garbage. Because if you're relying on lab, we assume in halacha that there's tam and kalim. We assume in halacha that there are rules for how tam works. So it's unlikely that lab tests would be sufficient over here to rely on. Probably we have to rely on the halacha the way it's been handed down for generations. But even having said that, there is still ample room to be made. That's why the OU policies, they won't give hashkacha on it. They won't give hashkacha because even if it's kosher, there's a rule of ein mevatel nisr l'chadchila. You're not allowed to purposely be mevatel nisr. So they're never going to give hashkacha on something like that. And they won't allow it even at OU events either. Rav Belsky and Rav Shachter are both machmir on this issue. But there's many poskim that would not have a problem with it based on the bittul b'sheish. And the chances are that it is bittul b'sheish, that the tam doesn't get absorbed throughout the entire kli. And even if it does, we have all these different sadim lakula. Okay.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.